This is where fine wine is made.
Let's pull the cork.
And enjoy another glass of Grape Encounters.
Peel me a grape. Crush me some ice. Skin me a peach. Save the fuzz for my pillow. And talk to me nice.
And it's time for your Grape Encounter for the week. This week, I am so glad to have somebody on the line. We had him on the air a couple of weeks ago, but I had the opportunity this weekend to attend a party at one of his famed restaurants. I had the best time, but it also got me thinking about one of my pet peeves. And so I asked Robert Simon, who is the owner of Bistro 45 and AKA Bistro in Pasadena, California, if he might be willing to join me on the line again to talk about some of my pet peeves and then some. Robert, thanks for joining me on the show.
Absolutely our pleasure, David.
Gosh,
pleasure to be with you.
First, I want to tell people about the event that we went to at Bistro 45. It was a Bastille Day celebration, and it was a whole lot of fun. You had a packed house there.
You know, this is our 22nd Bastille Day celebration, David. Sometimes it falls on the day, sometimes right after the day. This was on a Sunday because it's more convenient for people.
Yeah.
Only charging a small stipend. In this case, it was $50. And basically, it amounts to a party. It was all you can eat and all you can drink. We served three great wines, a rosé, a really cool white wine, a really cool red. And people got to eat and drink to their heart's content. They could have more mussels, more lamb, more calamari, whatever they wanted to have.
Oh my gosh, and you get there, you sit down, and the first thing that you see on the table is a pâté, right?
Yeah, it was our foie blanc.
Not foie gras.
And of course, that would be illegal in California.
You know, for the people who are listening to us in other states and other parts of the country, they got to think we're nuts here in California, but we just outlawed foie gras. Is there a substitute?
You know, both at AKA and at Bistro 45 for a while, we've seen this coming, and we've made a choice to get out ahead of it. So we have made something for both restaurants called foie blanc. That's our own name for it, meaning three different types of white liver, what we call white liver. There's veal liver, there's chicken liver, there's duck liver, not a force-fed duck liver, blended together with the right kind of seasoning, served at AKA with aspic and chef salts and brioche, and served over at Bistro 45 with house-made mustard, pickles and cornichons, pickled vegetables and cornichons. And that is just two different styles of what many people can do. So unless you want a piece of fresh foie gras seared, you're not going to necessarily miss it.
So is there an alternative that is closer to foie gras one can do? Is there a way that they're going to be making it now?
You could actually do fresh duck or fresh goose liver that's not force-fed. I don't think it would taste the same because the fat content would not be as high. That's the difference. That's what makes it taste so rich and so wonderful and goes so well with sauterne and goes so well with other kinds of, you know, food and preparing and food dishes. But if we were lucky enough just to get back from a short trip to Paris, and if in most cases in French restaurants, when you order foie gras, it's not fresh. It's something that they prepare like we prepare in our kitchen. In the upscale French restaurants, yes, you do get seared fresh foie gras, and that is the issue of the day.
Were there a lot of conscientious objectors leading up to this ban on foie gras?
You'd be stunned. We actually got lobbied by people who were associated with PETA, people who were associated with this movement in California to outlaw foie gras. We were actually told a year ago at Bistro 45 that we would be picketed, and we were already out ahead of it because we already decided to change regardless, not because of the political pressure, but because we felt it was getting ahead of what the customer was desiring. And interestingly enough, as we got to the end of the foie gras era in California, we did have a flurry of phone calls for foie gras, but we always had foie gras available for those people that wanted it before the ban. The demand just wasn't there until people realized they weren't going to be able to, quote, get it anymore. Although we all know what prohibition did to liquor, David. And so I keep hearing things about foie gras being available on these very surreptitious sources here in California these days.
So there will be people standing on the street corners of areas that have gourmet restaurants in trench coats, and they'll open the trench coat up and say, psst, psst, want some foie gras?
Yeah, you just have to make sure that it's been kept cold in a thermos carrier and that it's sealed, you know, in a cryovac package.
Oh, gosh. So if it's under somebody's trench coat, it's going to get all warm and nasty.
I have a feeling I wouldn't go to that guy.
We're going to talk more about this. I had stumbled upon a blog, but I don't want to get off the subject at hand. It's the difference between drinking wine and tasting wine. in my business and also in your business, we get invited to a lot of wine tastings. And you, of course, have a lot of wine tastings at your restaurants, I'm sure. But I got to tell you, I hate to go to most wine tastings. Does that sound horrible?
Well, no, why is that? Tell me.
Well, okay, so the reason why is because at any wine tasting, first of all, you're going to get the good with the bad. And I hate to sift through wines that are sort of mediocre or are not to my liking when I really want to sit down and just savor a glass of wine. And that's what I loved about being at your restaurant this weekend is that you had great wines. They were just delicious. And it was so nice just to sit there and drink something that I was enjoying as opposed to muddling my way through a bunch of stuff that I may or may not like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm glad that you felt that way on Sunday. We had a customer at a table not too far from yours, and he asked, how do you choose the wines for an event like this? I said, thought about it for all of 5 seconds, and I said, you know, it's actually pretty simple. I choose wines that I would serve people if they were coming to my house for a party, and I would be happy to drink myself. It's that simple. And so, of course, they have to fit in some sort of a price point so that we don't get killed on the pricing of an event like that when people drink certainly their share, if not then some. But I want to tell you that there's 4 different levels of what I classify as wine events. You have the charity / wine tasting / interactive wine event in which you have no idea what you're going to get. It might be a $2.99 bottle of wine that could be good or could be not.
We're going to have to talk about that one because I threw a hissy fit last year about an event that I was invited to come MC, and they wanted me to talk about wine. And at the was the day before the event that they gave me the list of wines that they were serving. So I look at this list, and there are probably 7 wines. I didn't recognize a single name. And I thought, wait a second, that's very unusual that I wouldn't recognize a name. So I start looking these up, and they're all like $2 wines. Junk.
Yep.
Absolute junk. And they're serving this to people who are paying like $75 to be there. And I thought, how insulting. Because for these people, it's just wine. We're just going to serve them some wine. And that's what they do. And you see this happen over and over and over again. Makes me just boil.
It's kind of how people, they juxtapose the term wine tasting just because wine is being served. The idea of a tasting really should be that there's quality there, that there's a little bit of education there, that there's some interactive component, and that's the next tier. The next tier is you go to a wine tasting in which there are quality, like we did a Santa Barbara Winery Compendium where we had over 20 Santa Barbara wineries, you remember it.
Over I was there.
NRKA.
Yeah, amazing.
And everything was quality and everything was interactive. You had winemakers there. It was a real experience, and if you get the right kind of cooperation from those people who want to promote their products, you don't have to charge an arm and a leg, and you can put it out there, and everybody, it's a win-win-win. Now, beyond that tier, though, David, is where Bistro 45 and AKA focus mostly, and that is we do wine dinners, and then we do wine parties. And that's 2 different styles of presentation. One is bent on the pairings of wine and food together. It will be next Monday, we're doing a Bistro 45 dinner with a Santa Barbara winery, where there's 5 courses paired up with 7 different wines, and they're specifically matched to the flavors of those wines. And nobody goes away thirsty, believe me. If they want more of something, we make sure there's enough. We learned that lesson over and over and over again over the years, that certain people won't drink so much, other people will make up for those people who don't drink as much. But they should not be denied. You want everybody to walk away feeling like they got bang for their buck and feeling like they really had a great time. And to some people, that means drinking more wine. The other is what you attended on Sunday, which is a wine party. We do an anniversary event every year, and we do a Bastille Day event every year. And people flock to those events like you saw because they know they're going to get quality, they're going to get great price, and they can drink as much as they want. You know, we can tell, being a responsible restaurant, if someone is overindulged, we might, you know, tell them, listen, I think that we're done, but that really never comes up.
It doesn't happen.
No, they come to our events as adults and as consumers who are educated in, you know, what the liabilities are out there, and they just are there to have a great time. And we noticed at the end of your event on Sunday, there were probably 6 tables that stayed for like an extra hour just talking, and they weren't drinking anymore. So it just shows that people have the sense about them that they want to have a great time and then leave with a great feeling, and they don't necessarily have to continue drinking alcohol until their blotto.
My guest is Robert Simon. He is the owner of AKA Bistro and Bistro 45 in Pasadena. And the way that I came to know Robert was that I received a press release about him. And what it said was that Robert brings Napa wine sensibilities to Southern California. That because he actually ran a restaurant up in the Napa Valley.
We learned a lot of lessons from Southern California moving up north in terms of what comes to your back door in a restaurant. And everything has to do, everyone talks about fresh, and I can't stand this expression anymore, farm to table. It has to do with sourcing, and it has to do with knowing those sources intimately and having it being bright and fresh and having a hands-on approach from the chef. And that's exactly what winemakers do. No winemaker is going to go make a wine or even pick the grapes before they're ready. And once they are, they're going to get them at their peak of their ripeness and handle them correctly every step along the way until they get into that bottle. And that's exactly what a chef's job is and what a restaurateur's job is.
And Robert, we're going to continue this conversation and get more deeply into Foie Gras in just a moment.
Yes.
On Grape Encounters Radio. There's a purely magical connection between wine and music that is simply undeniable, and no one captures that magic better than former Bad Company bass player Paul Cullen. Paul's private label, California Made Wines, are the perfect companion to his cool and imaginative acoustic jazz, or your favorite wine drinking music. I love Paul's wines and equally enjoy seeing others discover them. Sonata Rosso is a lush fusion of Syrah, Zinfandel, and Cab Franc. Sonata Bianco is a crisp, bright Sauvignon Blanc with a splash of Chardonnay. Sonata Rosé is a blush showstopper. Nicely priced and accessible online at paulcullen.com, you really can't miss with these imaginative wines and Paul's infectious jazz. Uncorked and unplugged. Experience the music and discover Paul Cullen's exceptional wines at paulcullen.net. When it comes to the connection between wine, music, and even food, no one captures the magic better than Paul Cullen at paulcullen.com. And we're lucky to have on the line Keith Sarlos from Sarlos and Sons. And Keith, I just wanted to get you here and have you tell us a little bit about what's new at Sarlos and Sons wine-wise.
Well, what's new at Sarlos and Sons? Well, really soon we'll be sharing our Grenache, 100% Grenache, all grown by us. We're also going to be sharing our Honor and Prepare, which is 100% Petite Syrah, a very big, awesome wine. I love introducing people to it. It's kind of the uncut raw, it's the director's cut, if you will, of our wine. We're also going to be releasing our rosé for the hot summer months, the Heartbeat, and getting ready to bottle quite a few different whites. I mean, it's a pretty exciting time around the winery.
So check it out at sarlosandsons.com. I guarantee you, if you go there often, you'll see a lot of changes, a lot of exciting new wines, and there's nothing that comes out of Sarlos and Sons that isn't absolutely fine. Hey, thanks, Keith, for being with us. And
thank you.
Watch out for our listeners and take good care of them.
We will. Always do.
I'm praying for rain in California so the grapes can grow and they can make more wine. And I'm sitting in a honky in Chicago with a broken heart and a woman on my mind.
And we continue our conversation with restaurateur Robert Simon of AKA Bistro and Bistro 45 in Pasadena, California. And the reason that we have him on Grape Encounters with David Wilson is because I had a great dinner there last weekend. And Robert, you're one of the few guys that totally gets it. And you know, it's like that movie, What Women Want. You know what wine drinkers want.
Well, thank you. It's after a lot of consumption myself.
Isn't that right? I mean, just serve what you would enjoy yourself, and it'll make people happy.
But I think that's a good rule of thumb. It goes just without saying, for if you invite people to your house for a barbecue or if you're, you know, going to do a potluck dinner, everyone should bring something that they're proud of.
The thing is this, is that so many times people will be having a party or, you know, a get-together or even a wine tasting, as we talked about earlier, and they're looking to get off cheap. They'll even call me and they'll go, what's a cheap wine that I can serve that I won't have to spend a lot of money on? The answer to that question is there is plenty of value wines out there right now. There continues to be great bargains out there, but you got to hunt them out. And what you don't do is walk into any of the stores that sell popular, cheap wine and just presume that that's the best thing that you can do. You can go into a big wine store and you'll also find great values, or you can get it straight from the winery.
I mean, come on, David. They've got a source like you, but why even bother you with a question like that? The internet is right there at their fingertips. It doesn't take a whole lot of work to get on there and say, okay, here are my price parameters. Show me, and you can go by any sources. They'll blend them for you and tell you, Parker says this, Spectator says that. If you don't trust your own sources, you can go directly to them. You have so many resources to be able to find something that's price sensitive or that you're looking for that you're not familiar with. Use them.
It's a perfect storm right now, people who want to enjoy great wine at a great price.
Because
the economy works both ways.
Absolutely. There's a glut of wine. I mean, we served a Torontes on Sunday night from Argentina that is one of the pedigreed wineries in Argentina called Maquia, M-A-K-I-A, high altitude Torontes, all stainless steel. I think I saw it in a store for $6.99.
You passed off $6.99 wine on us?
And people drank a lot of it.
You know what? I'm going to tell you what. That was one of the highlights of the evening. That wine was so delicious.
Yep.
It was so good.
And 2 years ago, David, that wine could have been in a store for $15.
It's just
they've had to compete in this marketplace that's crazy.
Well, that's right. There's no excuse for going into, I'm not going to name certain markets, but there's one in particular that sells a particular bottle of wine that's $2.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, but I'd rather eat my own liver.
No, we cook with it. We make sauce.
Yeah, that's fine. There's plenty of great wine out there that is, you know, under $5 even. There's some amazing bargains out
especially
there.
Especially this time of year, you have
gotta
rosé after rosé at $3.99, $4.99 that are stunning.
My guest is Robert Simon. He is the owner of the renowned, they're now renowned, I mean, seriously, a.k.a. Bistro. And Bistro 45 in Pasadena. Bistro 45 is legendary. Now, I want to go back to Fog Raw for just a second, because there was this blog I was telling you about, and it's in Vinography, Wine and Food Adventures in San Francisco and Around the World. And so this writer writes, outraged over the fact that on July 1st, 2012, it became illegal to produce, serve, or sell Fog Raw in California, Philippe Martin, president of the Gers Regional Council, an area in France near the border with Spain, demanded that French restaurants immediately stop serving California wine. That's going to have a big impact, huh?
What are there, about the 11 restaurants in all of France?
That's what he says. He says there are 11 restaurants in France that serve California wine, and they have collectively been responsible for selling a total of 97 bottles of California wine in the past year from producers such as Kendall Jackson, Behringer, and Gallo family. Oh, yes, and one bottle of Opus One.
That's very sad.
I got to read on here. It says that, meanwhile, Robert Koch, CEO of the Wine Institute, who support this show in a big way, was seen at a San Francisco restaurant crying into his coffee only hours after a press conference where he decried the deep injustice of punishing the California wine industry for the stupidity of its elected officials and warned California wineries to tighten their belts in preparation for what he called the wine industry equivalent of a nuclear winter.
Well, what's interesting is this whole thing about Fog Raw. There seems to have been a movement already in Europe in how Fog Raw is prepared to move away from force feeding. I have received a number of missives about that there is some farm in France that won awards for the quality of their foie gras without forced feeding. If that can be done, then people have to keep an open mind. That seems to be the only issue.
Well, I see an opportunity here for you, Robert, because we are in Southern California, known for people getting fat injections to make their lips look better and, you know, all of that. You need to team up with a cosmetic surgeon and see what you can do about injecting fat into non-force-fed duck liver.
In my copious free time, I think I'll get right on that project.
And this last line I'll share with you, and then I'll have to let you go.
You have to tell us where you stand on this subject, unless you don't want to.
I'm not fond of anything that is cruel to animals.
I don't really understand, except for that one small part of the populace that wants seared foie gras done that way, why it has to be accomplished through force feeding an animal and making them miserable.
Well, this is one of the last points in this blog. It says, local San Francisco residents seemed confused by the news, especially now that restaurants serving foie gras are springing up like mushrooms overnight in the Presidio, which is technically federal land and therefore not subject to the California ban on the delicacy.
Is that tongue-in-cheek or is that real?
It's got to all be tongue-in-cheek. My guest has been Robert Simon, owner of AKA Bistro and Bistro 45 in Pasadena. If you're from out of state, when you're here, go visit Robert because they're both great restaurants. And if you are in the area, get your butt over there. Robert, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, David. You're a gem, and I really appreciate your affinity for all the causes that you feel strongly about.
Both of them. Thank you, Robert Simon. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters.
Thank you, David.
Whether it's a birthday gift, anniversary gift, or a housewarming gift, a lot of people love to give wine, but are often torn about what wine to give. So I have an alternative suggestion. And on the line is Tom Silberkleit, who created that suggestion. Tom?
Hey, David, I wanted to let you know that people are calling me to ask if we would send them an autographed copy of one of our books, The California Directory of Fine Wineries.
That's totally cool, but an autographed copy takes a little bit of time. If somebody doesn't have the time to wait for that, what else can they do?
So I highly suggest Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or independent bookstores. That's the best way to get these books.
But if they want an autographed copy, how do they do that?
You know, I'll be happy to do it. They can contact me via my website, californiafinewineries.com, and we will personally autograph a copy to whoever the folks would like.
It's the greatest photographic tribute to California's finest wineries, the California Directory of Fine Wineries. The St. Mark's in the Valley Cellar Classic is an auction of rare and fine wines like no other, and it's going to take place on Saturday, July 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. in beautiful Los Olivos, California. Wine journalist and renowned travel writer Gabe Saglier has named the St. Mark Cellar Classic one of the top 10 not-to-miss wine events and noted that previous events gave the fancy Napa auction a real run for its money. This is a very rare opportunity to own a 100-point 1947 Cheval Blanc, the one-of-a-kind 18-liter San Ynez Valley Rhone blend, a 1961 Latour, or even a 2009 etched magnum of the highly coveted Roussac Catalina Island Zinfandel. The St. Mark's Classic, Saturday, July 28th, will be an unforgettable summer evening in Los Olivos that you shouldn't miss. To make your reservations, click on the St. Mark's Cellar Classic link at grapeencounters.com or email steve@clopepe.com. That's steve@clospepe.com. With Grape Encounters Radio, and this is destined to be one of the most educational segments of all time. And joining us to amuse and educate you is our beloved gadget guru, Matt Dubow from epicstyle.com, back from vacation.
Yes, back from Hawaii.
Are you all rested and just feeling mellow, Matt?
Not rested and not feeling mellow. There's a lot to do here, so I jumped right back into it.
That's why I never take vacations.
Oh, you have to sometimes.
No, because you know what happens? It's the contrast. You know, you get all mellowed out, and then you come back to mayhem. And if you have mayhem all the time like I do, then you don't have to worry about it. It always feels just right.
It was a working vacation.
My body is acclimated. We're going to get into something interesting, really interesting here, Matt, because I have come up with what I think is the ultimate compendium of health-related claims pertaining to drinking wine. You know, we've heard various ones, okay? But there's a number of them here that you've probably never heard, or maybe you have. And so we're going to do another Gadget Guru quiz in just a moment.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is the toughest one ever, though.
Ever.
Before we do that, I had a question, and I've had this question a couple of times, and there's nobody better to answer the question than you. And it pertains to aerating and decanting wine.
Okay.
And this is what the question was. Somebody wrote me and said that they had done as we had recommended, which was to open their wine and to decant it. But they ended up not drinking all of the wine. Now what? Now, I have a perspective on this, but you may have a different perspective. I want you to go first.
Well, I have a few different answers for this.
Okay.
And the first one, what you could do is there is a decanter out there from a company called Metricane that actually has a vacuum stopper that you can put on top of it. So you decant in their glass decanter, and then if you don't finish all the wine, you can pump the air out of the decanter.
Right.
So that's one thing you can do. The other thing you can do, actually, is if you save the bottle, you can use a funnel, pour it back into the bottle, and then use a preservation system on that bottle. Other thing you can do is make a sangria out of that wine.
Oh, Matt, that was a good idea. I didn't even see that one coming. Make a sangria. Or you can do what I do, which is probably the easiest solution of them all.
And that would be?
Finish the bottle.
I agree with you on that.
So let's talk about the preservation opportunities that you have over at epicstyle.com.
Okay. Well, if you do pour it back in a bottle, you can use private preserve, which is an inert gas. And what you do with that is there's a bottle that has a little straw on it, and you essentially pour this, or however you would describe it, into the bottle through
squirt
the straw,
it in. Yeah, squirt it
in,
yeah.
And then you would put a stopper on top of that. And what the inert gas does is essentially takes out all the air and preserves the wine.
Is the inert gas, it must be heavier than air, right? It goes down, air comes up.
The can is super light. I know private preserve has been around a long time, and we sell quite a few private preserves. That is definitely a lot of wineries go that way with the private preserve.
But you don't have to worry about when you squirt it into the bottle that it's all going to escape before you can get the cork in?
No.
Because it settles down, right?
It does settle down. And then the other methods is you can use our preservation system or a vacuum in. And what you do is you have a special stopper which goes onto the top of the bottle. And then you have a pump that what you do is you put the pump on top of the stopper and pump the air out.
It's super easy.
You have the electric doodad, which you place on top of the bottle, and you push a button, and it electronically takes the air out, and then it also tells you the temperature of your wine.
You stick it on the bottle, and it hums for a little while, but it's sucking.
For people that like gadgets, it's a great gadget.
I told you, that gadget should have a tagline when you market it. This device really sucks.
We'll change the packaging for you.
There's one thing, though, that's the second part of this whole conversation, which is remember that when you've decanted your wine, you have taken your wine to the next step. You've exposed it to air. The wine has changed. It's also become a lot more fragile at this point in time. Got to keep that in mind. You got to handle with care. And I would say, even if you do use a preservation system, I'd get to that wine as soon as possible.
I definitely agree with you.
And this is something that I tell people. I know not everybody agrees with me. When wine is in that fragile state, I stick it in the fridge and then let it slowly come back to room temperature. Actually, you don't want it to really come to room temperature. That's one thing that very much misunderstood by people, that the wine shouldn't really be room temperature, but we're talking about red wine now. It should be a little bit cooler.
Right.
With the white wines, you know, you don't need to worry quite so much about the preservation, and you can, you know, generally just cork it and put it back in. But it doesn't hurt to do that as well.
I would still preserve it.
Yeah. The main part of this question is that you've opened the wine. Maybe you didn't put it in a decanter. Maybe it's just the bottle's been open for a couple of hours and it has been breathing, although breathing in the bottle isn't all that efficient, and not that much wine really gets exposed to air because the air has no way to get down to the lower regions of the bottle.
Right. That's when you decant. You usually want to get a decanter with kind of a bulbous bottom, so there's more surface area that the wine's exposed to.
Yeah. Okay. Lots of good suggestions. We're talking to Matt Dubo, the gadget guru at epicstyle.com. The most important thing that you can do when it comes to wine is to preserve it and to decant it. Not in that order, necessarily. But anything that will add air to the wine, and certainly you can use any of the acrylic aeration devices. By the way, that's another important thing, Matt, that we didn't mention. Instead of decanting, if you don't think you're going to drink the whole bottle, use an acrylic or other form of aerator and only aerate the part you're going to use, and then use your private preserve or whatever, and then you won't have exposed the entire bottle to air.
Right. And I think most people that I know do that.
Okay. All right. Now, Matt, there are a number of health claims that have been made pertaining to drinking wine and alcohol, but I was going to quiz you a little bit. Are you up for it?
Let's go for it.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you true or false, and you are going to tell me what you think. Is it true or false that wine can be used as an antidote for poison?
Wow. I had never heard that before.
I know.
But since you're starting off with that question, I'm just going to say yes.
Am I that transparent?
Answer number two, yes.
Okay. Well, as it turns out, actually pure alcohol, which wine is not, is often given in treating cases of poisoning.
Oh.
And it can inhibit the toxic effects of ethylene glycol. This is one poison that's very popular that people drink. It's antifreeze, actually.
Oh.
So there was a case of a 24-year-old Italian who ingested a large quantity of antifreeze. I guess he was cold. Anyway, he was warm after they put a lot of alcohol in his system. I think wine would take a bit more time, and he'd be spending a lot of time in the bathroom because I guess it takes a lot of alcohol. But nonetheless, alcohol is used to treat poisoning.
That's interesting. I had never heard that before.
Very interesting stuff. Will alcohol, you think, help you lose weight or gain weight?
Wow. That's another tough one, but I'm going to go with lose weight.
Why would I even ask the question? Right? If it was gain weight.
Correct.
I need a ringer to throw at you, dude. Actually, in a study published by the Journal of Biological Chemistry, some Purdue University researchers say they found a compound in red wine, in grapes and blueberries and passion fruit.
Oh.
That blocks immature fat cells' ability to develop and grow.
Wow, that's interesting.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
So I'm going on the red wine diet. That's it.
I thought we'd been on that diet before.
I've been on it, but my fat cells seem to be ignoring the wine. All right. Wine good for your figure, I guess, but is wine good for your bones, yes or not? Or no?
No.
Yeah, you would think that, right?
Right.
But it turns out that a new study has assessed the effects of alcohol and wine withdrawal on bone turnover. In other words, because your bone is constantly changing, you know?
Right.
It's constantly morphing. And anyway, so what they did was they took a group of postmenopausal women who normally drank one or two glasses per day several times a week. And when they took them off of the drinks, their bones became weaker and didn't morph. What do we call it? I don't know what you call it, but they didn't regenerate. That's it.
Oh.
As well. So it turns out it was kind of a reverse style study, but it turns out that it was good for your bones.
Huh. You're with all sorts of facts today.
Yes. True or false? Alcohol can exacerbate the problems associated with head injuries. Did I use too big a word there? Exacerbate?
I would say yes.
Make it work. Worse, rather.
I would say yes.
Alcohol can make head injuries worse. Actually, a dose of alcohol may be a good treatment for people with head injuries, emergency doctors say. And they're saying this because people appear less likely to die following brain trauma if they have alcohol in their bloodstream.
Huh.
Isn't that strange?
I would think exactly the opposite. I don't know, because when I have those hangovers in the morning, I think I drank too much.
They say that the amount of alcohol consumed appears to be important, too little, and there is no effect, too much, and the beneficial effects are lost. So it has to be just right, kind of a three bears kind of a thing.
Oh, okay.
But they also stress that people who drink alcohol also tend to be accident prone and more likely to have head injuries. So in a way, you get this right.
Oh, thank you. In a way.
In a reverse sort of a way. Let's see, what else can I share with you? Oh, alcohol. This is interesting. Does drinking wine make you smarter?
Of course.
Why?
I don't know.
You have no idea. You're just throwing it out there.
It has to be, yeah.
Actually, people who consume as little as one glass of wine per week have significantly greater cognitive functioning, sharper thought processes than teetotalers. And that's from a study of over 6,000 Brits.
Okay.
And the beneficial mental effects of alcohol were found when a person drinks up to 30 drinks per week.
Huh.
How about that? And these are studies from, it's called the Whitehall Study. And it actually began in 1967, and they've been studying people for all that time.
Oh, I need to drink some more.
I'm going to give you one more, and that's it.
Okay.
Does drinking wine improve the quality of life?
Oh, of course. That's a no-brainer.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you come home, you kick back, you have a glass of wine, and one would think that makes life better. But there actually is some research behind it. Research from the Boston University School of Medicine has shown that by drinking alcohol regularly in moderate amounts, especially wine, that's going to be more moderate than hard liquor, middle-aged adults may improve their quality of life. The quality of life was measured using something that they call the Health Utilities Index, which looks at factors including dexterity, emotion, cognition, and mobility. They studied 5,400 Canadians at age 50 and then followed them for some time. And they found that those who consumed moderate alcohol, again, that's no more than 14 drinks a week and no more than 3 a day for women and 4 a day for men. Well, it's figures. It's Canada. That's a lot. Anyway, they had overall better scores than those who abstained completely.
Oh, wow. That's some great information.
Yeah, I've got more, too, but we can't do it today. But if you are really, really smart and you really, really want to have a great lifestyle, go to epicstyle.com. Many thanks to my guest, Matt Dubow, the gadget guru. Coming up next, it is the world's leading expert on the aphrodisiac properties found in some food and wine, Amy Riley, with an amazing revelation about how pregnancy affects your sense of smell. Next on Grape Encounters Radio. Whether it's a birthday gift, anniversary gift, or a housewarming gift, a lot of people love to give wine, but are often torn about what wine to give. So I have an alternative suggestion. And on the line is Tom Silberkleit, who created that suggestion. Tom?
Hey, David, I wanted to let you know that people are calling me to ask if we would send them an autographed copy of one of our books, The California Directory of Fine Wineries.
That's totally cool, but an autographed copy takes a little bit of time. If somebody doesn't have the time to wait for that, what else can they do?
So I highly suggest Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or independent bookstores. That's the best way to get these books.
But if they want an autographed copy, how do they do that?
You know, I'll be happy to do it. They can contact me via my website, californiafinewineries.com, and we will personally autograph a copy to whoever the folks would like.
It's the greatest photographic tribute to California's finest wineries, the California Directory of Fine Wineries. The St. Mark's in the Valley Cellar Classic is an auction of rare and fine wines like no other, and it's going to take place on Saturday, July 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. in beautiful Los Olivos, California. Wine journalist and renowned travel writer Gabe Saglier has named the St. Mark Cellar Classic one of the top 10 not-to-miss wine events and noted that previous events gave the fancy Napa auction a real run for its money. This is a very rare opportunity to own a 100-point 1947 Cheval Blanc, the one-of-a-kind 18-liter Santa Ynez Valley Rhone blend, a 1961 Latour, or even a 2009 etched magnum of the highly coveted Roussac Catalina Island Zinfandel. The St. Mark's Classic, Saturday, July 28th, will be an unforgettable summer evening in Los Olivos that you shouldn't miss. To make your reservations, click on the St. Mark's Cellar Classic link at grapeencounters.com or email steve@clopepe.com. That's steve@clospepe.com. We are back with the home stretch of Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson. You may recall last week we had on a good friend of the show, Amy Riley, one of the leading authorities on the aphrodisiac qualities found in wine and food. Actually, I'm sure she is the leading authority, but she's also a bit humble. She also had a baby recently, and we were talking about her drinking wine or how it affected wine drinking being pregnant, because I presumed that she probably wasn't drinking wine, but she told a little bit different story. And Amy, you got me in trouble.
Oh, David, you know, I love getting you in trouble, but not that kind of trouble.
Well, here was the deal. I got a couple of letters from people that were concerned that we were condoning the idea of drinking while pregnant. Right. And I certainly tried to make it very clear that that was not at all my position. And certainly, I believe you got to take care of yourself and you need to follow your doctor's orders and you need to be sensible. What they were reacting to, I think, was the fact that you had said that you had some wine while pregnant, but you also said that even the smell of wine completely puts you off.
And so, and I did make a comment about, you know, sort of belittling some of the fetal alcohol studies. But what I was saying, if anyone misunderstood, what I was saying is there hasn't really been enough study on the effects of wine. And I wish that we would do more study on wine and fetal alcohol syndrome. And, you know, a lot of the studies are decades old as well. And so I'd like something current, specifically on wine, so we would be better educated on the topic, because everyone has to make that decision for themselves. And, you know, with more information, we could definitely make the best decision. But what I was talking about is, yes, I did have wine while pregnant, but what I had was, it's my profession to taste wine, and I was mostly tasting and spitting, and I just wanted to make sure with my doctor that that was an okay thing to do, because, you know, you do absorb a little alcohol when even if it just goes in your mouth and doesn't get swallowed.
But I think, you know, in some of these studies, too, and I don't care whether it's fetal alcohol syndrome or anything related to the effects of alcohol on the body, you can't lump wine in with spirits, because, you know, you take what's the percentage of alcohol, let's say, for a pure vodka? 80% or is it 60? I can't remember.
The average, I think it's haven't drunk vodka in a while.
I know it's not less. It's okay. So it's not less than 60.
Right.
And the average alcohol content for wine is 13%.
Right.
So they're not even in the same league.
And not even close. A 3-4 ounce glass of wine is a whole different thing than a shot of vodka, for sure. And I had said a lot of the studies that had been done on this topic were on women who drank hard liquor in larger quantities even than a shot, which is kind of frightening to me. But anyway, that's where we were coming from. But
yeah. It's
something that everybody kind of has to make their own personal decision, you know, with the help of their doctor. And mine was to do a little bit, mostly because it's my profession, and, you know, that was my decision. Although I should tell you, when my mother was pregnant, the doctor, when she was in her third trimester, she was having difficulty, and the doctor ordered complete bed rest and a glass of wine every day. And my theory is that's how I wound up in the wine business.
Well, that's not a good testimony for drinking wine and being pregnant. Amy. Come on.
No, it was completely what was done. And in fact, my doctor said he used to give wine IVs to women who had early contractions.
All right. Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say. For the record, err on the safe side.
Oh, absolutely.
And talk to your doctor and do what your doctor tells you.
Yes,
period.
Do what your doctor tells you.
You know, if you think anything is risky, please don't do it. And I'd rather you be safe than sorry. And just think, when you're past that pregnancy and the time comes that you can drink wine again, boy, is it going to be good. Now, let's talk, Amy, a little bit about the thing we didn't get to, and this is the idea of how pregnant women are used to identify characteristics of wine. This is so interesting.
Yeah. So I have a friend, a vintner friend, who wrote a paper. It was presented at a wine symposium in Germany in the 90s. And what he studied was was the ability to detect the flaw of sun-cooked wines, the wines that have been, you know, sat out, got overheated, and are therefore no good. But to be able to detect that just by the smell. And he found that pregnant women were unbelievably good at detecting this flaw. And in fact, he found they were good at detecting all sorts of flaws in wine.
And this is something they could do literally with just smell, right?
Just smell. It never passed their lips, so don't worry.
Okay.
It never went in their mouth at all. It was simply on the aroma. And I know when I was pregnant, the changes to my sensitivity to aroma, the change in that was extraordinary. There are a lot of differing opinions. Some scientists say that absolutely there's no evidence that a woman's sense of smell changes in pregnancy. However, it is definitely believed that women during childbearing years, whether they're pregnant or not, because of their higher levels of estrogen, have the best sense of smell of anyone.
Well, why don't they just give wine critics shots of estrogen?
There we go.
Isn't that a great idea?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Would you want to be first?
No, not really.
Okay, then.
Not really. I don't think that would be a good idea. So, but that's a real deal thing, though, huh? They really did that. You said you had the smelling abilities of a bloodhound,
but you also
said that you didn't really enjoy the wine.
I did not, and you know, one of the things that most studies have agreed upon is that bitterness becomes very pronounced. Bitterness, and I found that tannins also came forward, and I've read accounts of other pregnant wine tasters who say very much the same thing, that the tannins become very pronounced. Pregnant women are really turned off by bitterness. And it is thought that, these kinds of turnoffs, it was evolutionary, and it was to protect the fetus. So, for example, I was turned off by the smell and taste of wine. Well, guess what? It's not good for you when you're pregnant, and that's probably why.
You know what? But I've got to wrap it up, Amy. I've got a theory of my own. I think when you're pregnant, you don't feel like tannin, and you become bitter because you can't drink wine.
Beautiful
Amy,
way to wrap
Amy
it
Riley,
up.
You can find all of Amy's stuff on lifeofriley.com, her books, her words of wisdom, and you still won't find a picture of me there. Coming soon. Amy, thanks for being on the show. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters for this week. Will you talk to us down the road a little bit?
Love to.
All right. Well, take care of that baby, and we want to see it soon. And that's going to do it for today. We'll be here same time, same channel next week on Grape Encounters Radio.